are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, February 22nd, 2020. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, South Carolina debate, a crap show, which according to the Insta polls apparently helped Bernie Sanders. Meanwhile, White House in panic mode over the stock market's reaction to coronavirus. Meanwhile, everyone else a little bit more concerned about the White House failure to respond to the actual virus. Polls show Bernie and Biden now tied in Texas. That is Joe Biden's second firewall. Polls also show Sanders leads amongst African Americans, which was Biden's first firewall. Amazon doing its best to curb mask price gouging in the anticipation of coronavirus hitting the states. And Supreme Court okays border guards shooting children across the border. Clyburn endorses Biden in South Carolina. Modi starts building detention camps. That should end well. And a five-year, $100 million NSA program yielded one serious or even remotely serious investigation. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the show. You know, I headlined this yesterday, but did not get to talk about it. And I probably will. There's going to be a couple of votes that McConnell's taking. We're not sure exactly when those votes are scheduled, but they're starting to discuss them in the Senate. Part of Operation, well, I mean, this is part of the culture war aspect of of the election in the fall, you know, and really part and parcel of the over 180 judges that Trump has now placed on the federal judiciary. We will begin to see the implications of this go, you know, for decades. The other day, I can't remember what was the case that went to the D.C. Circuit, but one of the judges on the three-bank panel that I think it was the Medicaid work requirements. One of the judges that quashed the work requirements was appointed by Jimmy Carter. So just imagine that, but in reverse, from these enormous amount of judges that Donald Trump has put on the federal judiciary. And he still has another year, essentially, to do it, presuming he loses in November. And that's, you know, that's a big presumption. Incumbents do have advantages. All right, let's talk a little bit about the debate. We did do a wrap-up of the debate, which you can find on YouTube. We'll do a little bit more now. We have clips, obviously, from last night. It really was a disaster. I should say, if you were watching last night, you saw me admonish my son, Saul, to go to bed at one point. He's had a little trouble going to bed as of late. He did go. He had some comments about the debate that maybe I'll share a little bit later.
Oh my God, I can't wait.
He thought it was pretty funny. He thought Bernie was older than he thought, and he thought he looked like Joe Biden. But then he also got very confused and thought that the people on stage could actually hear us when we were talking.
So, easy mistake to make.
Yeah, well, he was punished for that.
It's page one.
They can't.
What's wrong with you?
Just a reminder,
you have a
folks.
Jewish tradition to keep up.
The AM Quickie. The AM Quickie is available at amquickie.com. Check it out. We have had a... What percentage? Is it a 50% bump? In a month? We've had a 50% bump in listenership. So if you are not one of those people, you are making a mistake. People are finding it very, very useful, particularly in this day and age. Just keep up on the news. We should have put it in the feed when we were on vacation. That was a big mistake on our part, but forgive us. So here is how – this is clip number one, correct? Yep. Michael Bloomberg, I think, was probably the biggest loser in this debate. To the extent that there was a loser, I would say that it was Michael Bloomberg. I think a lot of people did not win. I don't know that anybody won, and in that situation, you're in like a four-corner situation in basketball, and the person in the lead wins. And I think that's why, you know, some of the polls right after the debate showed Bernie got the advantage there, because I think on some level, it's like people went in, and he was obviously leading in the polls, and I think people came out and said, I have no reason to believe that anything's different, and I think that's probably what happened. But Bloomberg, I would be surprised if he doesn't lose another couple of points because of this debate. The first debate that he was in really hurt him bad. And there was a couple of moments. So what do you do if you know that you did horribly in the first debate, but you want to sort of make it seem like, these things happen. It's just off my game. It's not a big deal, right? It's not a big deal. We've all been in this situation where something embarrassing happens. You're embarrassed about something, and you have two ways of responding. You can respond defensively and signal to people that you're defensive about it, and maybe there is some truth there or something. Maybe that's a problem. Or you can respond confidently and slough it off and maybe make even a joke at your own expense, which signals to people like, he's not bothered by this. Well, Bloomberg really tried to do the latter, but he ended up doing the former. And this is important here. Matt is going to scroll through to where it is in the debate. Now, this is an hour into the debate, and Michael Bloomberg is asked a question about redlining. But he wants you to know that he was in no way embarrassed by last week's debate performance.
In this
Mayor Bloomberg, please, we were going to ask you about this. I want to give you a chance to respond, because in addition to what Senator Warren just said on Twitter, she called you a liar and a borderline racist because of what you said about redlining.
Yes, I'm sorry, but unfortunately she's misinformed on redlining. You can go back and look at the record. I fought against it before 08, the crisis, during 08, and after that. Redlining is not the problem with the mortgage market, but it was a problem for the communities where it was done, and we stopped that. Let me also say, because it just since I have the floor for a second, that I really am surprised that all of these my fellow contestants up here, I guess would be the right word for it, given nobody pays attention to the clock. I'm surprised what? They show up, because I would have thought after I did such a good job in beating them last week that they'd be a little bit afraid to do that. But excuse let me just say, when you're talking about affordable housing.
Folks, listen. All right. This is, you know, we try and stick to politics here. I don't like to give personal advice about stuff, certainly not financial advice. But I do understand this dynamic. And if you want to communicate to people that you're not defensive about something, if you meant to say it at the beginning of seeing them again for the first time and you forget, don't wait to bring it up out of nowhere, because then it makes it seem like, yes, in fact, you've spent 50% of this debate waiting for a moment to pretend like you were just casually remarking about
I'd
last
like
week.
To spontaneously say now, an hour into the mock of the debate that we are presently in, that now that you're discussing another horrific thing that I've said and done in my career, we've already done, I guess, two of those, but it's not true. I didn't say that black people shouldn't have houses, but I did so great last time.
Dude, just take the L.
I just popped that joke off.
You gotta let it go. You don't want to force a round peg into a square hole. If you find yourself, I mean, this is like...
He had an audience that...
Ask me a question about gun violence, please.
And then it goes like this.
I'm not a racist, incidentally. No, and then it goes, I just want to make that clear.
No, it goes like this. You ask for the question about gun violence, and I go, okay, we'll get to that. What about blaming the financial crisis, not on Wall Street, but on poor people?
Boy, I got to tell you, great weather we're having these days, isn't it? I'm really surprised. What did he mean by contestant because no one's following the clock?
Because in reality shows, they break the clock.
Yeah.
Just like black people break their mortgage agreements, which is why we had redlining. Oh, I should have said that. You were misinformed about what I just said.
For some reason.
Anyways, I'm doing a great debate.
Every candidate besides Bernie last night thought it'd be a good idea, or at least Biden and Bloomberg, to just complain about how everyone's over-talking.
Right.
Everybody else.
Right, right. Whiny Biden is the best.
That's what
Biden.
America wants.
Right, exactly.
Someone complaining to the revs.
Right.
Just make fun of...
Mr. Trump has spoken of against me. Do I get extra points?
They want to speak to the manager. If Bloomberg doesn't drop at least 10 points after this debate, we will definitively know that the debates don't matter.
Well, the debates don't matter that much.
The last one seriously, seriously damaged him.
10 points?
I saw one that was up to 20.
I mean,
yeah, that one was bad.
I don't know if it was 10 actual points, but you know, his trajectory went from like straight, you know, almost straight up to basically like almost straight down.
I guess especially for someone like him who is just living in his own ass.
He was so susceptible to that because there was no foundation for his rise.
Well, as Tony Caron said, you know what Bloomberg's best moment was last night, right? The ad for his campaign.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. That's also, first off, let me just say this about the debate. I mean, the debate was bad. The questioners were really bad. There was a time where the League of Women Voters sponsored all the debates, and they would have more or less the same, the same moderators, a small group of them, and some of them were decent, some of them were problematic, but at least on some level they could create a narrative over the course of the debates, and because they weren't so commodified, there wasn't such a desire to sort of go after stuff that was sort of meaningless but might be more I don't know, of the moment. And this is, I mean, you know, I don't expect a candidate to complain about those things because it comes off poorly. But really, this is such a disservice. The idea that these things are commodified in this fashion. The DNC, you know, the RNC can do what they want, I guess. I mean, well, the DNC too can do what they want. But what they really should do is make a concerted effort to... because they can't control the outcome of these things. It's already been clear, right? Like, they tried to do it during the 2016 election, and it didn't work. It didn't cut in the favor that they thought it would. They don't have the ability to anticipate or predict the implications of these things. So just give it to an organization that is nonpartisan. Put in a list of moderators that you want. The Republicans can put in a list of moderators they want, and you randomly pick from them or something like that. There's a way to do this where it is not commodified. You can let the different networks, you know, have the broadcast rights, but it's not, should not be a commercial for their own, you know, like cross promotion of their shows. It is just get people in there who can do the job well, as opposed to like trying to, you know, pump your evening news thing.
Yeah, that sounds like communism. Television.
That sounds like communism.
Yeah. In fact, I think when the League of Women Voters did, I mean, I remember it was like McNeil and Lear who would do a lot of that.
It was always on PBS, or right?
I can't quite remember, but nevertheless, like, you can put it on if you know, let all the networks decide if they want to carry it or not, and if they want to bid for the rights,
let them bid for the rights, but you don't get control over the backdrop. You don't get control over the moderators.
Who streams
you don't
it.
Get control over that. Yeah, it should be for public.
Yeah.
I mean, this theoretically is a public service. We got shut down on Twitch last night. I mean, I don't really care that much about it, but, you know, we anticipated that we probably might, but it's ridiculous.
It's totally fair use what we're doing.
I agree with
particularly that. Because it's not just criticizing the politicians. It's also criticizing the way this stuff is covered. That's yep. important for democracy as well.
Yeah, and it's important that they don't have a say over people doing that.
We'll figure out another way of doing it. I guess Hassan, he does some type of sync thing. I got to figure that out. But hey, folks, sustainable sneakers. I've noticed this across the board now. There's more and more clothing and shoes that are sustainable. They're trying to, but nothing is as sustainable as Kariuma. These sustainable sneakers are the footwear of the future, and there is a big waiting list for Kariuma's low impact kicks. Apparently 5,000 people deep. Kariuma is a DTC sustainable sneaker brand. Their high and low top styles are good looking, crazy comfy, and consciously made. I don't even have mine here because I forgot to bring them in. I've been wearing them. But Kariuma shoes are the brand new, but they come with a perfect broken fit with old school design and new school ethics. Their Oka and Katiba sneakers are made with premium natural materials that are sourced responsibly. Plus, Kariuma just launched their 100% vegan and carbon neutral sneaker. Ibby. Made with 3D bamboo knit and recycled PET green EVA outsoles made from sugar cane, a cork and organic Mamona oil insole, and recycled laces, threads, and labels. All of their styles come with their signature crazy comfort green insoles. Their packaging is made from recycled and 100% recyclable materials. And by purchasing carbon offsets, they literally create a footprint balance, a carbon shipping footprint balance of zero. If your pair doesn't fit perfectly, you return them free of charge. Literally, I was wearing these two nights ago. I walked by Myla's room. My daughter, she's 14. She has had a lot to say, critical of my sartorial. And her response when she saw the sneakers was literally like, "Whoa, Dad." That is a quote. For a limited time, our listeners can get exclusive 15% off your first pair of Kariuma sneakers. Go to Kariuma, Kariuma.com/majority to get 15% off. Check it out. That's Kariuma, Kariuma.com/majority for 15% off today. Folks, you know, it's a very, if you are anything like me, you have no time to read but for stuff for work or to your kids at night, like Harry Potter or, yes, I'm doing it. But there's an incredible app called Blinkist that will be your new secret weapon for reading books that you know there are some takeaways there that you want. You don't necessarily have time to read through all of the prose. Because Blinkist takes the best key takeaways, the total baseline need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books, condenses them down to just 15 minutes that you can read or listen to on your phone, on your tablet, or your web browser. It's made for busy people. You can listen to it. You can read it. So for me, there's like a whole, I have like almost like, I mean, they have a bunch of different categories, but I have whole sort of like silos of stuff that I feel like, oh, I should read this, but I'm not going to, or I'd like to read that, but I don't have the time to do it. And so for me, there's a lot of like, well, I'll read about like, pick up some quick history books, you know, just some of the key takeaways,
Normandy.
some of the stuff like the business stuff. Like I always like, I don't know anything about business. And there's some concepts that I've picked up through this stuff that has been helpful, just like even, you know, like the 80-20 rule. I didn't know anything about that. You don't want to put, you know, 80% of your resources into something that's, you know, only going to give you 20% returns. You want to do the reverse. And mostly 80% of the returns comes from 20% of your efforts. But now I'm on to this whole thing where it's like, and I wish I knew this, well, they probably didn't have it 14 years ago, but they have all these titles in parenting. And you can read six of these things in an hour, essentially, or listen to them. And because, you know, I went through, I don't know, 20 parenting books, and you get to the end of it and you're like, this was a waste. That's what you go through. What? No. Having the kids, period. No, I may still do it. Like, I will not sit down and read an entire parenting book, but I'll listen to three different parenting books if it takes me a half an hour, takes me 35 minutes. You bet. You could use any tips you can get. With Blinkist, you get unlimited access to read or listen to their entire massive library of condensed nonfiction books, all for one low price. And for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/Majority Report. You try it for free for 7 days, and then you save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, BLINKIST.com/Majority Report, to start your free 7-day trial and save 25%. They got that book by Jared Diamond, Turning Points for Nations in Crisis. That seems particularly relevant right now.
Be a really interesting book.
Future of Capitalism by Paul Collier. I don't think it's a Marxist critique, but
Collier's a, he's a development economist.
Yeah.
That would be interesting.
Yep. And maybe not necessarily something you want to read the whole thing, or maybe you listen to that for 10, 12 minutes and you say, I'm going to read the whole book.
That's what I was going to say. Blinkist is actually also a great way to preview whether or not you really have to say, like, you know what, this is a great intro, and I'm going to read the rest.
Sign up now at Blinkist.com/Majority Report. Blinkist.com/Majority Report. All right, let's get back into the debate here and go over some of the things that we are... I mean, we could talk about also... well, let's do the... Let's do the debate, and then we're going to get into it. I mean, the big story, I think, is coronavirus. And that, I think, you know, we said this in the wrap-up last night, but I still believe that there was a big opportunity for the Democratic presidential candidates last night to leverage coronavirus. And I think, like, it actually could have been effective for all of them. Because, one... For, I think, 60% of the electorate, at least, the idea, and people are predicting this now, that we're going to have travel restrictions in this country. I don't think they're going to be like, you can't go out of your house, but I think it's quite possible that it may impact the domestic flights at certain times. I mean, who knows? And I don't think we're going to have like a huge rash of deaths. But I think like they want to keep it under control because it's not as bad as the flu. But it's in terms of its ability to kill people at this point. But we also have an entire system that tries to mitigate what happens with the flu. Right. Like we have flu vaccinations. We have hospitals that are prepared to deal with kids coming in with the flu.
And it still kills a ton of people.
And it kills
every
year. A ton of people. And so, and regardless of whether it turns into anything or not, the concern and anxiety is real. My kids have been coming home from school for weeks concerned about the coronavirus, which means that there are other parents out there who are concerned about the coronavirus. Because the kids are not reading, as far as I know, the international section of the newspaper. And this would have been an opportunity for any of these candidates to go up there and show, like, I'm completely competent. Talk about a kitchen table issue. This is one. It also would bring about the fact that one of the things that really Donald Trump has escaped in his presidency, because many of the incompetencies that are throughout the administration are things that are obscured to people who aren't in government, and things that, you know, we will feel the impact of the incompetence for years to come, years and years to come, but we won't necessarily be able to draw a direct line to it. But there are times where there are crises, where there are events Wes in Japan on Twitter, our friend who called in during Fukushima, reminded me there are no natural disasters. There are only things that happen in nature that man is not prepared to deal with. I think that was the point he was saying. And this is an instance where Donald Trump has not had to face a crisis of this sort. And it is one that is like coming down the pike slowly. And there is political value to this. There is actually also material value, because you put political pressure onto the White House and they're going to have to respond and actually start to do stuff, because this is going to be a problem for us. And so I think they missed an opportunity, and we'll talk about it. Chuck Schumer apparently yesterday was already in the Senate and had, was outlining a list that they wanted everybody in the Senate to start to push to get the administration to ramp back up, because they've done a lot of cuts. We'll talk about the specifics of that.
Yeah, but you don't want people to vote out of fear, do you?
Out of fear? Yeah, exactly. I think the idea that, like, this is, you know, we have not had an opportunity. People go out there and they say Donald Trump is incompetent. But as a citizen of the country, some people, I think, experience Donald Trump's malignancy insofar as, you know, like if you're a person of color and, you know, Jeff Sessions says to the police departments around the country, like, hey, don't worry about it, guys. We're not going to come a knocking. Or, you know, if you're an immigrant there's a whole host of folks who are directly implicated by his malignancy. But in terms of incompetency, we've only been told about his incompetency, right? There's only acting cabinet members. We don't see any, blah, blah, blah. It's all theoretical. This is where the rubber meets the road. And this is why it will have salience. And this is why they're so freaked out about it in the White House and pretending that it's not happening.
Well, we saw it in Puerto Rico, but a lot of people apparently don't care what
happens care.
In Puerto Rico.
Don't care. Exactly. And that's why their response to what was happening in Texas was, you know, they put more emphasis in it. I think what we saw in Puerto Rico was one part incompetence and one part malignancy. Like, I think that there was just like, we're going to punish Puerto Rico.
I would say more than, yeah, malignancy. But I think it's been a big problem, and I don't want this virus to spread, obviously. But I think that there's been I think part of the reason that Trump is doing well in terms of his polling numbers is that for a fair amount of people, they're starting to conform to the idea that he's actually just, you know, he's just a normal president. And that doesn't match with the huge amount of melodrama around him. So something like this could undercut that.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. In fact, all right, let's do this. I mean, we don't need to do the debate in order, right? We can do some of the corona. All right, let's go to the debate, and then we'll come back to the coronavirus stuff. In the debate, like I say, Michael Bloomberg was the biggest loser. At one point, he is asked about China. Now, Michael Bloomberg has an enormous investment in China. Enormous investment. I mean, in ways that, like, I don't think we can even imagine. And the coronavirus is bringing up an issue, and we'll talk about it in a bit, of, you know, we're going to have right now, there's a list that the CDC has, I think it is, of 150 antibiotics, prescription medications, et cetera, that they are concerned we will not be able to have access to because the coronavirus will have shut down production. And this is a big concern of a lot of people that not only like that, you know, Matt Stoller is very good on this, that we have outsourced so much of our production to China that we are very, very reliant on them doing things that are in our interests when sometimes they may not be able to do that. Here is Mike Bloomberg being asked a question.
Mayor Bloomberg, You've said that President Xi Jinping of China is not a dictator and that he is responsive to his constituents and that the U.S. must cooperate with Beijing. How far does that go? Would you allow Chinese firms to build critical U.S. infrastructure?
No, I would not. And I think the Chinese government has not been open their press. The freedom of press does not exist there. Their human rights record is abominable, and we should make a fuss, which we've been doing, I suppose. Make no mistake about it. We have to deal with China if we're ever going to solve the climate crisis. We have to deal with them because our economies are inextricably linked. We would not be able to sell or buy the products that we need. And in terms of whether he's a dictator, he does serve at the behest of the Politburo, of their group of people. But there's no question he has an enormous amount of power. But he does play to his constituency. You can negotiate with him. That's exactly what we have to do.
Now, there's a story in The Intercept right now by a woman named Letta Hong Fincher. We've had on the show. And she talks about, the story is about what the Bloomberg Limited Partners threatened her.
It wasn't even her. Her husband was a reporter for Bloomberg. He reported this series on how the Xi Jinping's family had enriched themselves, essentially. They got credible death threats. And this was in a period of time where real death threats. A British businessman had just been poisoned by the wife of a senior politician. Read the article. That's the context. So she tweeted out in October 2012, "Now that the New York Times has gone public about the Chinese government pressure, I can admit that we've gotten death threats after the Bloomberg story on Xi Jinping." Within hours of my tweet, the original Maya Plot replies to questions. A Bloomberg manager called my husband and said, "Get your wife to delete her tweets immediately." And anyways, it goes from there. We can't summarize all of it. But the point is that Bloomberg did not have the back of their journalist and this family getting threats for doing this reporting.
They quite
the
opposite. Well, but it's not just a question of them not being there. They have their holdings are so huge in China. They are so afraid of offending the Chinese government that their lawyers were attacking this family.
And the Bloomberg ended up killing this story. And basically said, if we run it, we'll be kicked out of the country. So.
Folks can check that out. The Intercept. So you've got Michael Bloomberg here. Now, this concept, he said this before, that they have a constituency. The idea that there is any leader of any country, like if you're a king, guess what? You have a constituency. You have to deal with the dukes, or you got to deal with the king of the north or whatever it is. Like, it doesn't,
you know, it's, I like this because it does show in general that it is actually kind of dumb to speak about singular heads of state in general. That is almost never the case. Like, even in North Korea, you're always talking about more complex systems. So if he was just making a public service point of like, wait a second, guys, that's actually not how China works and we need to be smart about it, that would be valid. But they're not autocratic.
Yeah,
they have a Politburo that manages their state capitalism.
It's the point where democracy is optional.
Well, which I think is quite optional.
He is conflating a democracy with having a constituency, right? And every single leader has a constituency. It may be just the billionaires. It may be just the people who have all the military, or it could actually be like the people who voted for them.
Yeah, that if seemed it's a to be democracy. What he was trying to imply.
Yo, he said this before. This is not the first time he said this. And
they
so,
do public opinion polling. He's equating that as well. And that's very Bloombergian. And when you look at the Chinese model, well, look, I mean, this is actually what the Chinese will put forward. They say, no, we're incredibly responsive. If you come out and you say there's a problem with garbage pickup here or something like this, we got you.
Right. As long as it's not you're actually looking for any type of power. We're just trying to provide you with services so that you do not kick us out of power if you get to the point where you could. So Bloomberg goes on, gets away with that because of how credulous the CBS moderators are. But what you will not get away with is saying exactly what Barack Obama said, that there are some countries who are autocratic who have achieved some, you know, success in certain areas of serving their public. Like, for instance, you could say that they're good with the garbage pickup. But the CBS will not let Bernie Sanders get away with anything like that, even though they've just let Michael Bloomberg get away with the idea that China, because Xi Jinping has a constituency, he's not a dictator.
Topic, Senator Sanders.
Can I say one
praised,
word on...
This, it's in the same theme, sir. You've praised the Chinese Communist Party for lifting more people out of extreme poverty than any other country. You also have a track record of expressing sympathy for socialist governments in Cuba and in Nicaragua. Can Americans trust that a democratic socialist president will not give authoritarians a free pass?
I have opposed authoritarianism all over the world, and I was really amazed at what Mayor Bloomberg just said a moment ago. He said that the Chinese government is responsive to the Politburo. But who the hell is the Politburo responsive to? Who elects the Politburo? You got a real dictatorship there? Of course you have a dictatorship in Cuba. What I said is what Barack Obama said in terms of Cuba, that Cuba made progress on education. Yes, I think... Really? Really?
Yes, literacy because there's no comparing bad. Those two.
What Barack Obama
Barack
said
Obama
is they made great progress on education and health care. That was Barack Obama.
I talked to Barack Obama.
Excuse me. Occasionally, it might be a good idea to be honest about American foreign policy. And that includes the fact that America has overthrown governments all over the world, in Chile, in Guatemala, in Iran. And when dictatorships, whether it is the Chinese or the Cubans, do something good, you acknowledge that. But you don't have trade love letters with them.
That also, that clip also, not only did it point out that you are asking me a question about being sympathetic to autocratic leaders, and you just let that dude get away with talking about the largest dictatorship in the world as if it was a responsive democracy because there's a Politburo. It also featured Pete Buttigieg's like sort of verbal tic that he had the whole evening, where he was talking almost like as if Pete Buttigieg was in a separate debate, in a separate temporal plane that would sometimes, like, the streams would cross and you would hear him talking. No one was paying attention, and he thought that he was being statesmanlike, and he couldn't really get there.
It was like a TV show where the first time through the run of events, a character is like speaking very forcefully, and then you look back on it and actually he wasn't saying anything at all. He was just imagining he was saying
exactly
it.
Right. It's one of those things like, this is what I would have said in that moment. And so that, you know, that was, you got the whole sort of gist. And of course, there's Sanders again doing something that you know, I think by now it's not as sort of shocking. I remember in 2016 when he did that in a debate with Hillary Clinton, where he actually like said the words like, we intervened in countries and was wrong. Like, that was shocking then. And now it's a sort of nobody.
Did we even poll like, when he you? Called Netanyahu a reactionary
no.
racist? I mean, that's historical.
What's also messed up about that moment, though, was they only asked the Jews about Israel and then just threw in Warren for like to make it seem like Israel's a pretty significant issue for all the candidates.
Can I just go on my ballywick for 30 seconds, regardless of Bernie's got to calibrate a lot of things. And I think they're actually overall doing a decent job, but these aren't just historical. They're trying to dislodge governments in Venezuela, Nicaragua, and Cuba right now. And really, your opinions on them are irrelevant to U.S. interference, which is extraordinarily aggressive, particularly under Trump and Pompeo. And so it's not just, I mean, the history lesson's hugely important, but it's like when people like Buttigieg are posturing and saying, we don't want to talk about the Cold War. We'll get to that. It's offensive. But they're talking about regime change and coup mongering right this second.
Yeah, I mean, they brought a guy in from Venezuela right. to the State of the Union address, and everybody in the room, Democrats and Republicans alike, addressed the guy as president. And basically, they're the only people who do. Nobody in Venezuela refers to that dude as the president.
And in Nicaragua, you know, those demonstrations, which are done in 2018, absolutely had a significant U.S. role. Does that mean that Ortega, you know, it's always the same dynamic. And the one thing I will add that is actually pretty interesting, that like, if you're going to give, if we're going to go, and there's legitimate criticism of both, but like, I would err on the side of cutting a break for an 11 million person island nation state that resisted U.S. economic warfare, assassinations, economic terrorism, to an invasion today, and gave people healthcare, literacy, and also helped like end apartheid and liberate Angola. I would actually err a little bit more softly for them. More so than like, you know, the largest states, you know, capitalist country, or, you know, neoliberalism with Chinese characteristics.
Oh, yeah. The moderators are absolutely unfair in equating Cuba to China. There's no question about it. Also, like, OK, I know maybe we don't need a history lesson as part of the debate, but if he wanted to, Bernie could bring up some of the terrible atrocities committed by, say, the Somoza dictatorship. Yeah. Like the worst things that you can think of. Raping nuns and children, things of that nature.
So moving on, the you know, so we have Bloomberg first exposing that he's an animatron and cannot deliver a joke and doesn't understand the point of the joke. Then we had Bloomberg showing, I mean, it's almost as if he's showing every aspect of his, of what is problematic about his candidacy. And he's doing it one step at a time. And so we had him, we showed his wealth and his investment in China, how conflicted he is in terms of assessing what China is, and therefore would be equally conflicted in terms of curbing things like, hey, you've put 1 million to 3 million people in concentration camps because they're Muslims, et cetera, et cetera. Now we're going to see what is problematic about Mike Bloomberg as an oligarch in this country. No longer conflicted, you know, with international things, which is very similar to Donald Trump. Here he is going to expose why he's conflicted in this country, where he accidentally reminds people he has bought literally all his support in Congress.
Let's just go on the record. They talked about 40 Democrats, 21.
Oh, pause it. I should say this is in response to the fact that Elizabeth Warren pointed out that Michael Bloomberg funded multiple Republican senators through the Senate. To the Republicans, through all the money he gave to people like Pat Toomey. He gave money, I don't think she brought this up, to Snyder in Michigan, Lindsey Graham, et cetera, et cetera.
Snyder, after, I believe, well, no, actually, I guess it would be before Flint. But
it was before Flint, but it was after he had already propagated the city manager rule. But he basically, that money helped Snyder go on to poison hundreds, if not thousands, of people.
Let's just go on the record. They talked about 40 Democrats. 21 of those were people that I spent $100 million to help elect. All of the new Democrats that came in, put Nancy Pelosi in charge, and gave the Congress the ability to control this president, I got them.
Oh,
number two, when you talk about
I bought
money,
them. What? Let's hear that again. I got them.
Really saying the quiet parts out loud.
Exactly. So don't remind everybody I bought the politicians. Oh, darn it. Darn it.
Gave the Congress the ability to control this president. I got them. Number two.
Yeah, this is like some Simpsons level stuff here.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what they're doing right now?
The only moment of self-awareness in the debate.
I'll tell you what they're doing right now at Bloomberg headquarters. They are writing a joke about like him buying, and he's going to wait until like 3 or 4 weeks from now and spring it on everybody. Remember that time? I'm going to remind you again about how badly I did in the debate. So there it is. That was Michael Bloomberg's one of the problems with Michael Bloomberg being an oligarch. Now, next up, Michael Bloomberg. I mean, honestly, it's amazing how multidimensionally problematic Michael Bloomberg is.
He's a target-rich environment.
Right. Let's just go through this one more time here. Okay, can't tell a joke and is horribly defensive. That's fine. He's can't. He can't. He can't. He can't really campaign. He defends a dictator in China because he's got so much holdings there that he doesn't want to get on the wrong side of them. He accidentally claims that he bought Congress because he's literally paid for so many of his endorsements and whatnot in trying to defend the fact that he also bought the Senate for the Republicans. And now let's move into his treatment of women who worked for him and his use of NDA and his money again to escape any accountability.
Years old, I got my first job as a special education teacher. I loved that job. And by the end of the first year, I was visibly pregnant. The principal wished me luck and gave my job to someone else. Pregnancy discrimination, you bet. But I was 21 years old, I didn't have a union to protect me, and I didn't have any federal law on my side. So I packed up my stuff and I went home. At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it, the way that Mayor Bloomberg
never
alleged
said that.
To have said to one of his pregnant employees. People want a chance to hear. People want a chance to hear. From the women who
I never
worked.
Said that.
I want
and,
to allow
and
the
for the record, if she was
respond.
A teacher in New York City, she would never have had that problem. We treated our teachers the right way, and the unions will tell you exactly that.
Pause it for 1 second. Just on that one point, go into my tweets, please, because I retweeted a writer from that right-wing rag, that left-wing rag, the New York Times, who has been writing on schools. Who New York Times reporters do not generally take these positions. Here, yeah, there it is, right there, Eliza Shapiro. And she tweeted out, so Bloomberg was in an all-out war with the teachers union in New York City for years. If you call them, as Bloomberg suggested, you will get quite an earful. So Bloomberg's lying about that, but... Which is, I guess, a prima facie argument that he's a liar. But continue.
Well Mayor Bloomberg, Senator Warren has raised...
Let us have the women have an opportunity to speak. The Bloomberg corporations and Mayor Bloomberg himself have been accused of discrimination. They are bound by non-disclosures so that they cannot speak. If he says there is nothing to hide here, then sign a blanket release and let those women speak out so that they can tell their stories the way I can tell my story without
having to fear
they're going to be sued by a billionaire.
Thank you. We have a number of issues discussed tonight, but I want to give the mayor an opportunity to respond because she has raised concerns about women in your workplace. At the last debate, you said some of your female employees might not have liked some of your jokes. Did these women take your jokes wrong, or were you wrong to make the jokes?
Probably wrong to make the jokes. I don't remember what they were, so I assume if it bothered them, I was wrong, and I apologize. I'm sorry for that. But what happened here is we went back 40 years, and we could only find three cases where
that's
women
convenient.
Said they were uncomfortable.
We only found three.
Nobody doing anything other than just making a comment or two. And what the senator did suggest was that we release these women from the nondisclosure agreement. I did that 2 days later, and my company has said we will not use non-disclosure agreements ever again. The senator has got it, and I don't know what else she wants us to do.
Oh, I'll be
We're
clear.
Following exactly what she asked to
I'll
do.
Tell you exactly
and the
what
trouble
I want
is,
you to do.
With this senator, enough is never enough for what this. Oh. I'm going to start focusing
Jesus.
On some of these other things. We just cannot continue.
He just falls right into it. He can't even get through his own.
Bitches
and,
be crazy.
Thank you. We've probably made the world
Honestly.
Better because of it. And by my company renouncing using these, we probably changed hopefully the corporate landscape all across
exactly.
America.
No, if you get nominated, we'll be relitigating this all year.
There's wait, pause it for 1 second. We just like this clip also has everything in it. There's Michael Bloomberg trying to defend himself and can't help but like basically say, we gonna listen to this? It sounds like my ex-wife over here, right? You know, give me a break.
You don't remember the old Bush belt joke? It ends with the punchline is kill it. Kill your baby.
This this is just another part of the complaint of one of the complaints that was in. I don't know how they got a hold of this, but this somehow was released. When Bloomberg noticed Garrison standing nearby, he asked, "Why didn't they ask you to be in the picture? I guess they saw your face," he said to one of his employees.
Sick burn.
Yeah.
Got her.
The graph above
it. Oh, yeah. And here it is. Okay. And so continuing his penchant for ridiculing recently married women in his employ, Bloomberg asked the plaintiff, "How's your married life? You married?" Plaintiff responded that her marriage was great and was going to be better in a few months, that she was pregnant and the baby was due the following September. He responded to her, "Kill it.
Kill it."
And plaintiff asked Bloomberg to repeat himself, and again he said, "Kill it," and muttered, "Great, number 16, suggesting to his plaintiff his unhappiness that 16 women in the company had maternity-related status.
And just the source of that, the Washington Post interviewed a former Bloomberg employee, David Zellinger, who said he witnessed the conversation with the saleswoman. Zellinger said who has not previously spoken about the matter, said Bloomberg's behavior toward the woman was outrageous. I understood why she took offense. In case you need,
right,
you know, verification, because he's just lying about that.
He's totally lying. But let's go back. So he's dropped the ball there, and then Pete Buttigieg has a comment that is actually like decent. Like, we're going to be litigating this throughout the entire next general campaign. Maybe true or not, but again, he manages to sort of sound like somebody's just like dropped in a random Pete Buttigieg sound machine.
Someone watching at home.
Exactly.
We thought that when he spoke last night in the beginning that Matt was doing drops.
No, if you get nominated, we'll be relitigating this all year.
Do what
Senator,
I ask.
Senator Warren, that is a very serious charge that you leveled at the mayor.
Yes.
You told a woman to get an abortion. What evidence do you have of that?
Her own words.
And Mayor Bloomberg, could you respond to this?
Never said it. Period. End of story.
Look.
Categorically never said it. When I was accused of doing it, we couldn't figure out what she was talking about.
Mm.
But right now, I'm sorry if she heard what she thought she heard.
She's hysterical.
Or what happened. I didn't take any pleasure in that. And we've just got to go on, but I never said it.
Come on. What I asked the mayor to do is to do a release of all people who have discrimination
claims. We are doing that, Senator.
Who have
we want to get to the issue.
Come on, sweetie.
So
that's going to play great against Trump when they talk about abortion.
Right. And you know, like, I would never say that.
But there's some people that are still literalist idiots that think that Trump won't do that. He'll have a field day with all this stuff with Bloomberg.
We got one more Bloomberg clip, and then we'll get to that. We'll get to that one. One more Bloomberg clip to just round out his multidimensional problems that he has as a candidate. We have gone through his conflict of interest with China and his inability to respond truthfully about China because of all his holdings there. That's where his billionaire status becomes a conflict. We've seen that obviously with Donald Trump. We went through his being an oligarch, where he basically admits and then quickly changes his the words he's using, that he's bought a bunch of Congress people. We've gone through the point where he has shown an incredible disdain for women, even in the context of claiming that he didn't show any disdain for women. He did shows disdain for a woman bringing it up again.
There's no pleasing these people.
There's no pleasing the ladies.
I thought, do you guys have the same hormones
Give me. And then, of course, we showed his inability to actually be a campaigner and, you know, even deliver some self-effacing joke. Well, here is Mike Bloomberg. And they've actually cut this clip as a way of showing that he has sensitivity to the experience of African-Americans in this country.
Woke Bloomberg.
Yeah, he's totally woke.
But the one thing
that Michael Bloomberg cannot possibly imagine is that his billions of dollars weren't a function of him, right? That his position and station in life, that there were no, you know, the doors that were not shut on him because of just how he was positioned, they don't exist. And it takes all the effort he can muster to concede that maybe things are a little bit more difficult or would have been difficult had he been black.
Oh, wait a second. I know that if I were black, my success would have been a lot harder to achieve. And I know a lot of black people that if they were white, it would have been a lot easier for them. That's just a fact, and we've got to do something about it than rather just demagogue about it.
I love how he says, like, he gets his big, the big concession he has is that I understand my success would have been harder to achieve.
I would have been the owner of BET if I was black.
I mean, the idea, just statistically speaking, the chances of becoming a billionaire, if Michael Bloomberg was particularly his age,
could someone do a version of Black Like Me starring Mayor Bloomberg? I think that would be excellent.
And making his money on Wall Street services, I think is highly, highly dubious.
He also lied about what his positions were on redlining earlier, and he continued his lie about what his position on stop and frisk is.
At which he will continue to do. And this, again, I will plug Adolf Reed, though. This is a big part of his critique of all of these discursive methodologies, because they basically are like, look, if you can be trained to check your privilege or whatever else, all this other rhetorical maneuvering, you can use that to barrel forward with the same policy set. And that's exactly what he's doing while he lies about
that. We saw it from a lot of
candidates. That's what they're all doing because it's just a discursive,
egregious,
of course,
example.
Because it's just a discursive, you know, it's just a discursive method.
Do we want to go into the stop and frisk line now?
Sure. Let's do that. As long as we're doing our Bloomberg swing. Here is Michael Bloomberg. He's talking about stop and frisk, claiming that this is done in so much in the passive voice, right? Which is like, it was there and then it metastasized.
It
got out of hand. Like something, the invisible hand of the police force was driving this. And then when I saw it was getting out of control, I tried to control it as much as I could. It was like riding a tiger.
I want to ask you about a question that impacts the black and brown community. You've apologized for stop and frisk repeatedly. What exactly are you apologizing for?
We let it get out of control. And when I realized that, I cut it back by 95%. And I've apologized and asked for forgiveness. I've met with black leaders to try to get an understanding of how I can better position myself and what I should have done and what I should do next time. But let me tell you, I have been working very hard. We've improved the school system for black and brown
I got a subscription to Safety Pin Box.
And Ari Melber had on the woman who ruled on that.
This is the judge who heard the case that stopped stop and frisk. And let's hear her perspective. She's now retired.
And this was before the debate, by the way. She was responding to the previous time he lied about
retired federal judge. Did Mike Bloomberg decide unilaterally, it sounds like, oh, this has gotten out of hand. We better pull this back.
I'll say this whether you do or not, as a former judge. Mayor Giuliani had a tough policy that was controversial on predominantly black neighborhoods in New York.
That's right.
And Mayor Bloomberg came in and said, let's make it even harsher to the point that it was ruled by you unconstitutional.
That's true. And there was a second half to your question. You said, what did people say last night that was wrong? Well, Mayor Bloomberg said, when I realized it was bad toward the end, I ended it and dropped 95%. That is not accurate. In the last 2 years or so, it began to drop dramatically. It dropped 67%, not 95%. But it wasn't because he realized, had an epiphany that it was wrong. It's because of the court rulings. That's what happened.
Right.
I ruled.
And Joe Biden said that the Obama administration stopped it. I thought you stopped it.
Yes,
was Joe Biden correct or not?
Of course he's not. You got in just ahead of me. I was going to say that Vice President Biden was totally
lucky I'm
wrong
not
too.
In your courtroom.
That's right. He said that the Obama administration appointed a federal monitor. Totally wrong. I appointed a federal monitor in August of 2013, who didn't take office for 10 months because Mayor Bloomberg insisted on trying to appeal my ruling and getting it overturned.
So simply put, Joe Biden, in your view, took credit for something that judges actually did.
Absolutely.
That's what you call, like, what is it when you get the strike? And even though that's the split, the spare rather, and you got one pin over here and one pin over here, and you just the ball rolls and bounces off of both.
I was the guy banging the gavel.
That's right. That was the guy who stopped it all. I started with I mean, Bloomberg, horrible liar. Biden, horrible liar. And we didn't even have time to get into Biden talking about him getting arrested in South Africa or something. I don't even know.
I was the guy who said, hey, you got to talk to Mbeki. I was there. But I want to really keep emphasizing, though, that Joe Biden's lies are terrible and they're egregious. And they're like Hillary Clinton's lies. They're like, there is something qualitatively different we get to in the realm of Bloomberg, where he is the personal conduit of authoritarianism. I mean, stop and frisk is literally an apartheid-style policy. It's not hyperbole. And, that's... It's not like a legislative
Biden's got pack. That thing of, I mean, like, where he sort of puts himself in positions that maybe somebody else told him the story. And he's like, yeah, that was me,
right.
type
right.
of thing. Like,
no, versus I.
Bloomberg is lying.
I am lying about, yeah. in a completely verifiable manner, banking on the fact that my money and propaganda will overwhelm yep. people telling the truth.
Yeah, he's yep. doing Trump shit.
Yep. So there it is. I mean, those are the what was
more
it?
Efficiently.
Six different sort of like elements of Bloomberg that any one of them, I think, would be enough to depress enough Democratic voters in a general election to cause his loss. And that's why, I mean, the fact is, after two debates, literally, I don't know how much time did Bloomberg speak in those two debates combined? Maybe 25 minutes. Let's just say 25 minutes of exposure Mike Bloomberg gets versus the hours, maybe days, no, probably weeks. And I mean this like continuous loop of 30-second ads probably could amount to like a full week or two or three or even a month. He spent over $350 million on ads. And 30 minutes of actually opening his mouth and addressing what's going on has sunk the value of that money. I think you shouldn't be able to run for office unless you go into a debate, but I don't know how you'd ever make them. How much? 26 minutes. Somebody's got to count up how debates. Much the ad time that he bought and sort of calculate. Like, it's amazing. It's amazing what happens. And this is a very, very positive thing, not just for the Democratic Party, not just for America, but for democracy across the world on some level, because it shows that there is a limitation to what you can do with money. Now, he's a particularly egregious guy who, but there is... The irony is that his superpower, right, which is has $65 billion, is also his kryptonite, because he has bit that $65 billion has kept him in such a cocoon that he has absolutely no ability to understand why he is such a liability.
Yeah, I mean, call me naive, but I really thought someone with that much money would be able to afford like the best coaches in the world and the best like brand.
But you need to know that you have a problem. And the problem with that money is that everyone around you does it says like, you got no problems, boss.
You're going to save America.
It's that's 90% of it. And I think 10% of it is like, I think these debates are when you watch an NBA game, you know that you can't do that. When you watch this, especially if you do what we do, we're like, come on, I can figure that out. Yeah. And you don't realize that all of these people, this is a really intense process, right? And I he's coming in with a typical arrogance. And it's like, especially when you're completely out of touch, billionaire oligarch, but you also haven't campaigned for over a decade. Okay.
Yeah.
The last 10 years, all you've been doing is going to Davos and sitting with Fareed Zakaria and being like, how would you change public education, Mayor Bloomberg? Right. And all of a sudden, Elizabeth Warren's in your face and Bernie Sanders is in your face. And the moderators have to at least pretend to ask you about your any number of abominable positions. You're totally not ready. And you can't be. I mean, he could hire the best coaches in the world. And, you know, look, Trump does, first of all, he's an entertainer, first and foremost. And he weirdly, like, he has higher emotional intelligence. Like, I don't mean that as a value judgment.
Well, it's also...
But he knows how to work the room.
But it's
he
also...
Knows how to,
he has political skills that Bloomberg lacks.
That's true. But also, remember, like, the debates. Like, the advantage that Trump had in the debates was he would say, like, I'm going to build a wall. And then Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio would come in with, well, I'm going to build a wall that's 2 feet higher.
Right.
Like that was, there was nobody, there was nothing that he was saying
that
was really fundamentally different from, you know, regardless of whether you think the Democratic Party upholds these principles, everything that we're talking about are theoretically principles of the Democratic Party.
I'm also talking like instincts. Like, I don't know how look, we know that you had to pay a huge amount of money to be in that audience. Okay. So even if Bloomberg had nothing else to do with it, apparently the tickets to get into that room, if I'm reading Lee Fong correctly, I mean, tell me whether or not that's right. I read that
I've heard that has been the case in most of these
right.
things, but it does feel like
it feels like the room is pretty nice to Bloomberg.
Yep.
There was an amazing clip going around last night of Trump getting booed vigorously at a Republican debate, and Trump doing, frankly, what Bernie maybe should do at a certain point of being like, you know, looks like the room's stacked against me, but sorry, folks, telling the truth. That's the difference. Right. Bloomberg is paying for the room to be stacked in the large metaphorical sense. Trump had no problem going out there and working the broader electorate. And which is another reason that people coming out with this scam that Bloomberg could beat Trump are the most just either delusional or dishonest people in the entirety of politics right now.
Or
really well compensated.
Boom. Good employees.
I'm hearing so
good
many
employees.
Some of these anecdotes have to be real, but like I saw a tweet the other day, a woman said a canvasser came to her house. She said, sorry, we're a Bernie household. The canvasser said, oh yeah, me too. Absolutely. Have a good one.
How much do you think the team that came up with these hats made, like, total on coming up with the design for this? Not a socialist and bringing the buses.
Hey, I've got an idea. How about a little flag in the on the tag? Yeah. On the
respect the hustle.
Let's see how well these take off, Mike.
Oh, are they all of them?
Oh, yeah, they all have little flags.
Not a socialist. Bring in the boss. That is just like...
I mean...
Because we all know how much Americans love their bosses.
Did you bother focus grouping this? They couldn't have.
Like, who in their right mind would broadcast their love of bootlicking to the world on a hat?
They said to Bloomberg, this is a message directly to Trump. You're his boss. Oh, and he's like, I love it. That's I love it. How much are the hats? $75 a hat. Wow, that seems... normal. Okay.
So no more expensive than a gallon of milk.
Right. Exactly.
Just a banana, Michael. How much could it cost?
Am I really getting? I can't believe how cheap this is.
$75
You guys.
For a cat?
I knew I should have gone with you guys. You were right. You could get the best deals.
And Americans are out here complaining about costs, and you can get a basic ball cap for $75? What a bunch of whiners.
Unbelievable.
The only boss I want to bring in is Bruce Springsteen, who, by the way, needs to endorse Bernie.
Neil Young did.
All right, let's take a quick break and head into the fun half. When we come back, we got a little bit more on the debate, but we're going to talk a lot about coronavirus because I think there is... well, one, I think it's a relevant thing to talk about. But from a political standpoint, in terms of pointing out something that could be extremely significant in this election, extremely significant, and something that could be a big opportunity for Democrats both to, you know, show that they're competent to the American public and to actually get the Trump administration off their arse. Apparently, based upon... I think the pushing that we've seen, you know, and credit where credit is due, Chuck Schumer got on this. I think the pressure has now forced the Trump administration to respond at the very least. I just don't know that they have the capacity, the ability to do so. But we will check that out in a moment. Just a reminder, this program relies on your support. When you become a member of the Majority Report, not only do you support the free show, you get the free show free of commercials. And then you get the extra content. We have our members can see our video last night. I don't know if it lives anywhere else right now. We got shut down on Twitch. We shut it down on YouTube. So if you want to see our blow-by-blow of the debate, hop on to or become a member. Or if you're a member now, check it out. It's on the app. You can play video right on the app. We're going to be doing more of that as time goes on. So check that out. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. AM Quickie, sign up for it, folks. Try it out. I guarantee you, if you listen to this show, AM Quickie, sign up at amquickie.com. You listen to it 5 days in a row, you'll be hooked. Hooked for life. And it's totally free. Also, don't forget, check out the Nomiki Show. You can find it at patreon.com/the Nomiki Show. And Michael and Nomiki are going to be in California.
Super Tuesday.
6 days from now.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah.
Nuts.
It's going to be fun. Get your tickets. You like Alona's going to be there. Justin Jackson, Nando Vila. It's a
huge show.
It's a mega lineup. It'll be fun. On the latest TMBS, talked to Benjamin Dixon about Singapore and Mike Bloomberg and the cable news tantrum. Richard Wolff explained the labor theory of value to us and a whole bunch more. Patreon.com/TMBS, and where you get, you know, vast amount of extra content as a patron. April 3rd at the North Door in Austin, Texas, live show with Anna Kasparian, Abby Martin. And this Sunday, check out my Twitter timeline, podcasting with Brianna Joy Gray and Daniel Denver. And then we're canvassing in the Bay State, dude, for
I'm going to be doing, I think, right now, a live stream from Worcester, Mass. With John Benjamin on Saturday night in front of a bunch of canvassers, Bernie canvassers, in Worcester, in Wormtown, in some mill, old mill building. And we'll be going over the, what do you call it, the South Carolina results. And then I guess they get some tunes there. So, oh, and should also say... Oh, Brendan. Okay, go ahead.
That is
great.
Yeah,
go ahead, Jamie.
Every
go ahead.
Time,
yeah.
You know, I walked around Worcester recently. I think it helped me understand you a little better.
You walked around Worcester?
Yeah.
Jesus, I'm
like,
sorry.
Like, what if Sam was a town?
Yeah, there's some of that. Sure.
Anyway, this week on the Antifada, I'm going to put myself on camera. I had on Heather Fortune, formerly of the amazing post-punk band Wax Idols, currently a solo artist as well as a writer and kind of a dirtbag leftist shit poster on Twitter. We talked about our canvassing trip to New Hampshire, which involved seeing Bernie open for the Strokes and starting a riot. Also, we talked about how capitalism is ruining music, a little bit of girl stuff, feminism, all the missing women of New Hampshire, and Heather spills the tea on why she quit the band White Lung. That's for the real heads. Patreon.com/TheAntifada.
Literary Hangover, we did Ebenezer Cook's The History of Colonel Nathaniel Bacon's Rebellion. It's a poem, but don't be put off by that. We basically just talk about Bacon's Rebellion and, among other things, how George Washington's dad committed a war crime immediately upon arrival.
Brendan, what is this? Is this the one that Leo is EPing?
Yeah. So I worked on a pilot in 2018, spring 2018, and is now finally being brought to series.
Jesus.
On wow. True TV. It's called It's Personal with Amy Hoggart, who was on the Sam B Show. I was the research producer And the casting coordinator for the pilot, when I was gone for like 6 weeks here in 2018, which Sam so graciously let me go on sabbatical for.
It wasn't gracious, but it was nice.
I was going to say, that was brutal, I think.
No, Brandon, don't follow your dreams.
If those are your dreams, I got another thing to tell you that we got to sit down and talk
about.
As
an incentive, I'll share my bananas with you for lunch.
I didn't work on the series, but I am going to take credit for getting it, helping get it to series. So, you know, best of luck to them. It's a 10-episode season. We'll see if it gets picked up for a second season. It premieres tonight, so help those people out.
Have they been doing... Like Leo's been here for...
It took longer than I think they said it would take, as these things tend to do. But, you know, you and I, this is more of an off-mic conversation.
Right. My friend Leo Allen is the EP of this show.
Hey, Brendan.
Now, he wasn't there when you were there.
Brendan, okay. These apples aren't going to eat themselves.
Brendan got fired.
If you don't leave for 6 weeks, I could share some of my brown bag lunch with you.
I already did mine.
Good job. All right, folks, see you in the fun half.
You are in for it.
All right, folks, 646-257-3920. See you in the fun half. Who sent us this?
Anarchy. Alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back.
Just as delicious as you can imagine.
The alpha males are back. Back, 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 back. Boy is back. And the alpha males are back. Back, back, back.
Just want to degrade the white man.
Alpha males are back. Back.
I take all of it to my throat.
Alpha males are back. Back. Back.
Almost as what?
The alpha males are back.
You are a madman!
And the alpha males are back.
I am a total cunt.
Can we bring back DJ Danerke song, please?
Yeah, or a couple of them. Just put them in rotation.
DJ Danerke.
Well, the problem with those is they're like 45 seconds long, so I don't know if they're enough of a break.
That's fucking nonsense.
Hey, folks! Reminder!
I do not have Parkinson's.
And the alpha males are...
Psych! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Almost says what?
What?
Almost says what?
A hell of a lot of bank.
Have you tried doing an impression on a college campus?
I think that there's no reason why reasonable people across the divide can't all agree with this. Psych.
And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black Africans. And the alpha males are back, 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 back. And the Africans are black, 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 black.
Donald Trump out there, doesn't a little part of you think that America deserves to be taken over by jihadists? Keep it at 100. Can't knock the hustle.
Come on! Fuck them! Fuck them! Fuck them!
Things I do for the bigger game plan.
By the way, it's my birthday! Happy birthday to me, Jew boy!
I have a thought experiment for you.
And the alpha males are back, back. Africans are black, black. Alpha males are back, back. Africans are black.
Pay the price of blasphemy around here.
I am a total
pussy.